Now we're holding on Lamed Bay's second line from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that one of the differences between an onus and a mefate is onus shoisa ba'atzitza, the onus has to drink out of his dirty container, which we said means that we force him to marry the girl that he was ma'anis, even if she's handicapped or otherwise unattractive or what have you, and he's never allowed to divorce her. As opposed to a mafata, doesn't have to marry her in the first place, and if he does, then he's allowed to divorce her like any other couple. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rovin Parzikya Rav Ashi." So Rovin Parzikya asks Rav Ashi, "Mechti, let's consider Nigma Gamni Mehadot." After all, we learned previously that we learn details about onus and mefata one from another. We said that each of them has to pay 50 shkalim, we learn by a zeda shava, which we learn the zeda shava in both directions. We said by onus it says 50, by the mefata it doesn't. On the other hand, by the mefata it says shkalim, it says yishkol, and by the onus it doesn't. And we learn one from the other in order to establish the amount they have to pay. So lohomil sanami ligmuru mehadadi. So why don't we use the Gzeira Shava to learn this one from another as well, and say that the same way as the Onus is forced to marry her and can't divorce her, so is the Mefata. And the answer is Amakra, it can't be, because the Pasuk says, Moho Yimharenu Loi Laisha, the Pasuk says that he should make her, that he should moher is Meloshin Moihar, that he gives her a dowry, he gives her a ksuba, that he should do that loy for himself, laisha, for a wife. And the word loy implies midaitai, the word loy implies with his own consent. So it has to be, since the pasuk, if the pasuk had meant that it can be, that he's forced to do it, then it would have had to say without the word loy. Moher yimharen laisha, and then it would mean, And then it would mean that he'd be forced to do it. Actually, though, I'll be shown and we'll learn that even without the word loy, it would still mean that. The way the Pasuk is phrasing it makes it clear that it's voluntary. Which Tosfos points out, you have the word loy in connection with the onus as well. You have the word veloy si alisha. But the difference is, Tosfos says, first of all, there's two things. Number one, the veloy si alisha continues loy yuchal b'shalcha. He's not allowed to divorce her ever. So, given that once he marries her, he's not allowed to divorce her, there's no svara to say by the onus that we would say that he's allowed to pick in the first place whether to marry her or not. The logic is that those two things go together, that if he can't divorce her, and the pasuk clearly says that, the logic is that he has to be forced to marry her in the first place. Second of all, Tosfos also says, the fact is, the veloisia is the, when it comes to the onus, the veloi is in connection with the woman, that she should be to him for a wife. So therefore the implication is it depends only on his das, as opposed to moho yimharena, is moho yimharena loy. The loy refers more to him, that he should take her for a wife, and therefore that implies more that it's his das in addition to hers. I mean, either one of them can prevent it, as we learned yesterday. But the point is, the way it's phrased by the mefata implies more, the context of the word loy over there suggests more that he has the option to refuse if he doesn't want it. And that's how it is. Okay, we said ketzad shoisabat tzitzichula. We said how is that? We said even if she's lame or blind or what have you, he still has to marry her. However, the Mishnah had said that if there's found in her dvar erva, if he finds evidence that she's behaved in an unsneistic way, in particular dvar erva means more than just, let's say, that like she went out without a shaker or something. It means that she was actually mizane, that there's evidence that she was mizane during the marriage, in which case she becomes, and we're talking about berotzen, so then she becomes also to him. So we said if that happens, or if to begin with she's also to him on the grounds of any issur, for example, that she's a mamzeres, or any of the other cases where she's not allowed to be married to him, then we said he doesn't have to marry her, or in the case where she was mizana, then he can divorce her, because when the pasuk says v'loy siya l'isha, it implies isha or u'yaloy, she has to be suitable for him, and in these cases she's not suitable for him v'halof. So the Gemara says, Omer Kahana, amrita l'shmaita kamedi Rav Zvid min Ahavda, I said over the statement to Rav Zvid min Ahavda, and I asked, Why is that the case? Nesi Esser v'nitchalos Esser. Why does the Esser override the Lois Esser? You have the Esser of the Loisi Elisha. You have the Lois Esser of, for example, that she's a Mamzeres and not allowed to marry a Mamzeres. Why doesn't the Esser override the Lois Esser? Now, Tosfos points out, if she's Mizane, then in fact you do have an Esser and a Lois Esser. So then, fine, there's no question he'd have to divorce. Then there's no question that he divorces her, because we know an Esser is not Doche, a Lois Esser and an Esser. But we're talking about, let's say she's a Mamzeres, where there's only a Lois Esser. So where there's only a Lois Esser, why don't we say that the Esser overrides the Lois Esser and say that he has to marry her after all, even though she's a Mamzeres? And the answer is Omerli, and Rav Kahana says, Rav Zvidman Hajar answered me, Heichan Minin Nesi Esser v'nitchalos Esser. You know what's the kind of situation where we say that an Esser overrides a Lois Esser to go in Mila B'tzaras. For example, a person has a Tzaras on their Orla, where normally there's a Lois Esser, you're not allowed to cut off tzaras, you're not allowed to damage simonim of tzaras in any way. But on the other hand, here you have a mitzvah saseh to do a bris milah. So then, the esser overrides the lois esser, because the lois efshel kayum la esser, because there's no other way of accomplishing the esser other than by overriding the lois esser. But over here, it's not necessarily that you have to override the Lois Esser in order to be Mechayim the Esser. After all, we learned yesterday that in the case of the Oynes, which is what we're talking about over here, she or her father has the right to refuse the marriage. Okay, well then, if she were to say, I don't want to get married to him, mi Issa la Esser kwal, then the Esser doesn't exist at all. The Esser exists only if she wants to get married to him. So therefore, in this case, we tell her, We tell her, listen, you're a Mamzeres, you're not allowed to be married to him. So when he comes and says, you know what, listen, I'm sorry, I understand, I did wrongly, the Torah says I have to marry you, should we go ahead with it? Then just tell him no, tell him I don't want to marry you, and that's that, and then the Esser is there, and then the Esser is, then you're not overriding the Lois Esser, because the Esser can't be accomplished anyway. Tosfos points out, by the way, that when it comes to Mila B'tzaras, really what you have actually, that's an unusual case. You actually do have, but there is an Esser and a Lois Esser involved over there of cutting off Tzaras. But the Gemara in Shabbos has a long discussion about it and says that the vort is that Mila is such an important mitzvah that it has the power to even override an Esser and a Lois Esser. So the Gemara over here is not using it as an actual source for the concept of Esser Doche Lois Esser. It's just using it as an example of a case where the only way to accomplish the Esser is by violating the Lois Esser.
Where do we know that she has the option to refuse the marriage?
We learned that yesterday. We learned that in the Gemara yesterday, that in the case of the Mefata, the Pasuk clearly says that if her father doesn't want to give her in marriage, then the guy just pays the knas. And we said that we have actually the double expression, ma'in yama'in, which teaches us that both, that either she or her father can refuse it. In the case of the oynes, we know that she can refuse it because the pasuk says v'loy siya, implies that she has to have the das, she has to consent to it, and that her father is able to refuse it. That we had Rava and Abaya gave different ways of Abaya and Rava gave different ways of learning it. Was it based on Svara Shaloya Hekoyta Nisker? Was it based on a Kabbal Chomer from Mefata? Whatever the case, that's how it is. In the case of both Onitz and Mefata, either she or her father, remember that we're talking about, by definition, she was a Naira, or as we'll talk about later, a Tana at the time, so therefore her father still has Rishus over her. So therefore either of them can prevent it. The difference is that by Mefata, also the Mefata himself, the one who seduced her, is able to say, you know what, I don't want to marry her, she's ugly, she's handicapped, she's whatever, I'll just pay the knas and have done with it, as opposed to by the onus, he doesn't have that option. So now we're saying, if she's in fact also to him, under, for example, Lav, then we tell her, when he comes and proposes marriage, tell him, I don't want to marry you, and then that's that. Then you're not overriding the Lav in order to accomplish the Esser, because the Esser is in effect being bypassed altogether. Actually, the Ritva learns that that what it means is the Gemara means a little bit differently. It's not even that we have to tell her to say I don't want. The very fact that there exists the possibility of saying I don't want, that itself makes it a weaker kind of esseh, and therefore that's not the kind of esseh that would override a lois esseh. When would you say esseh doich lois esseh? When it's the kind of thing where you're not given a choice. For example, mila b'tzaras, you have to do the mila. Or for example, kilayim b'tzitzis, you have a four-cornered garment, you have to put tzitzis on it, etc. As opposed to over here, he learns that what the Gemara is saying is that since she always has the option of saying no, that itself makes it a weaker kind of esseh, and that's not the kind of esseh that can override a lois esseh, and therefore that's what it would be, as the Mishnah says, if she's a mamzeres or otherwise also to him, then the marriage doesn't take place. The Mishnah says, Yisoyma shenis'arsa v'nis'garsha. If a Yisoyma, so an orphan girl, so till now we've been talking about her father still alive. Now we're talking about that her father passed away. Shenis'arsa v'nis'garsha. So she was Ma'uras, she was Niskadish, and now she's divorced from that. But Gemara is actually going to explain that we're actually talking about two different cases over here. We don't mean that she's an orphan and she's Nisarsa and she's Niskadisha. We mean that there's two separate cases, one where she's Yisoba and the other one where Nisarsa and Niskadisha. And her father is still alive. Anyway, Rabbi Lazar Omer, her Oynes Chayev Vamafata Potter. So Rabbi Lazar says, if it was a case of onus, he would still be chayev in the knas and the other payments. But if he's a mafata, then in that case he's potter for reasons that we're going to see right away in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Baba Chana Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Lazar b'shitas Rabbi Akiva Rabbi Omer. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Lazar here in the Mishnah is following the opinion of his Rebbe Rabbi Akiva. Now, we learned a couple of days ago that we had a machloikas from Yosef, Lili, and Rabbi Akiva. What happens if a girl was nisaris and then is divorced from that? Rabbi Yosef, Lili said there's never any knas again. Rabbi Akiva had said there still is a knas. And then we had two different versions of what Rabbi Akiva says. One is that he said that one is that he said that the knas goes directly to her. And the other is that it still goes to her father. So now Rabbi Lazar is following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva as expressed in the Mishnah. Where there in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva had said that the knas goes, that there is a knas and it goes to her. So now Rabbi Lazar is following that opinion. Rabbi Akiva had said that there still is a knas even after Erusin, as long as by now she's divorced. And again, as we said the other day, it has to be that she's divorced, because if she's still Mooresis and somebody else says Oynos and Mefata her, then that guy is going to be Chayiv Nisa, and we're back to Kamla B'Drabim. So we have to be talking about that she's divorced. And Rabbi Akiva had said that there is a knas, and the knas is for herself. Goes to her. Rabbi Lazar follows that understanding. Mimai, and how do we know that, says Rabbi? Midikotoni, Yisoma, Rabbi Lazar, Oma Ha'onas Chayiv, Amafata Potter. Because let's look at our Mishnah. It says that in the case of an orphan girl, Rabbi Lazar is saying that if the man was an Oynos, then he's still Chayiv to pay her, but if he's Mafata, then he's Potter. So the question is, why does he even need to say that? Yisoma Pshita. Obviously, we can understand that in the case of a Yisoma, that's how it would be. Let's consider. A Yisoma has no father to receive the knas. Therefore, it's quite obvious that the knas, if there's a knas, is going to go to her. Who else would it go to? So then it becomes easy to understand why there's a difference between Onus and Mafata. Oynes was against her will, therefore, so she wasn't moichel on anything, therefore the knas goes to her. Mefata, after all, it was with her consent, so it's logical to say that in effect she was moichel on that knas by the fact that she went ahead with it willingly. It's one thing when the knas goes to her father, as we talked about previously, she doesn't have the ability to be moichel on behalf of her father. So she may have been willing to go along with it. Doesn't mean that her father shouldn't still be entitled to the knas. But yeah, there's no question that if her father has passed away, that she's in effect been mochel on the knas by agreeing to have relations with this guy. So there's no reason for Rav Elazar even to mention the word yesoma just for itself. So obviously, ela hok mashmalon. So obviously, what must Rav Elazar be implying by using the word yisayma? He must be telling us the nairash in his arisum and his garsha ki yisayma. He's informing us that a girl who was moreses and then is divorced from that is the equivalent of an orphan. And that would, even now, of course, she's not because her father was alive. But the comparison would be so just like with an orphan girl, there's no question that the money would go to her in the case of onus. So it is also when she was ma'arusa, when she was miskadish, and then divorced. Rav Elazar is not saying that yisoma, who is Nisaris and then Nisgadish, that all three things have happened. We're talking about two separate cases, and he's mentioning Yisoma in order to clarify why am I saying that Nisaris and Nisgadisha, you have these dinim, because in effect she's like a Yisoma in that regard. So all of this is meant to clarify Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And the Gemara says, Omer Rav Zera, Omer Rav Rashila, Omer Rav Hamnuna Sava, Omer Rav Adaba Ava, Omer Rav, Halacha ki Rav Elazar. Yeah, the halacha in that regard is like Rav Elazar. And the Gemara says, Kori Rav alayed Rav Elazar to vina de Hakimi. Rav applied to Rav Elazar the expression, the most fortunate of the Chachamim. Tuvina, Rashi says, is related to an Aramaic word which translates the word Ashrei. And the word Ashrei, among other things, means fortunate and happy and doing well. So Rav Elazar, in that sense, is Tuvina de Hakimi. He's the most fortunate of the Chachamim. Meaning, in other words, that the Mephoshim explain, because his opinion is the most logically consistent, more so than Rabbi Yossi Agluli's, because according to Rabbi Yossi Agluli, why would there be a difference? According to him, you would have to say that in the case of a Yisoma, there is a Knas and it goes to her, but in the case of Moresis and Megoreshis, there's no Knas at all. So he's learning it from a positive, but fine, it's still logically, it doesn't seem to be consistent. Rabbi Akiva of the Braisa also would be saying that after Moresis and Megoreshis, it still goes back to her father, which again wouldn't be consistent with the case of Yisoma. Rabbi Elazar is the one who's being the most consistent. He's clarifying his opinion the most clearly. So Rav is giving him this sort of extravagant praise to Rina de Hakimi because within this he's saying the most logically consistent din that would apply across the board over here. Okay. Now, we learned previously that the 50 shkolim that the guy pays for onus and mafata is not all of what he pays. In addition, he also has to pay several other payments as well. Now, we know when a person injures somebody else, then there can be up to 5 payments they make. You've got nezek, tzar, ripui, sheves, boshes. Not all of those apply over here. But of the ones that apply, we still have to apply them. We learned a couple of Mishnayos ago, we said that the Mefata, in addition to the 50 shkolim, also has to pay for boshes and for pagam. And then the onus, in addition, has to pay for tzar. So let's now define how we figure those amounts out. So the Mishnah says, Ezehu boshes. How do we define boshes? That goes, hakol lefi amivayesh v'amizbayesh. That depends on the one who caused the humiliation and the one to whom the humiliation was caused. Meaning, so Rashi says like this, let's consider, if the onus or mafata, as the case may be, if the man was a low-class person, then you have 3 possibilities. It could be a low-class person, it could be an average person, or it could be a very important person. So Rashi actually uses the expression that if he's in the middle, then the boshes is going to be greater than a low class person or a high class person. And the Maharshal, the Yamshal Shlomo explains the logic behind that is like this. If he's a very low-class person, then people are most likely to say, you know what, she never would have done such a thing voluntarily. Even if it was a case of pituri, they're going to say, you know what, he's a lowlife, you know, so he did this kind of thing. It was much more from him than from her. There's not really, in the case of onus, people are going to say, you know, she obviously didn't consent in the slightest, because why would she bother with such a low class guy? And even if it was pituri, they're going to say, you know what, it's more from him than from her. And if he's a very important person, then the other way around, people are going to say, you know what, okay, you know, he's very important, so therefore, she felt maybe she didn't have a choice in the matter or whatever, as opposed to if she's an average person, then the bushes to her in a way is greater, because people are likely to say, well, you know, why did she, even in the case of Oynes, people are likely to think that maybe to a slight extent she consented to it. After all, he's only an average guy. It's not like she'd be in any kind of danger or anything if she refused him. And in the case of Mafata, all the more so. So it comes out that if he's an average sort of person, then the boishes is greater than it would have been if he was either a low class or a high class person. And in the case of Miss Bayesh, means it depends on her status. The more prominent a family she's from, obviously the boishes is going to be greater. So that's how you figure out boishes. So basically, it has to evaluate those factors, and then they put a figure on that, and that's the amount he has to pay. What about pgam? We said in the previous mishnah that both the onus and the mafata have to pay pgam for the fact that now there's a certain damage to her. There's a certain she's lost something. She was a besula, and now she's not. How do we do that? Royin oisaki li shikonim keres bashuk. We evaluate her as though she was a maidservant being sold in the marketplace. So you figure out kama hoisa yafa v'kama hi yafa. How much would she have been worth before when she was a besula, and how much is she worth now when she's not a besula? Now, why would there be a difference in price? Why would a person pay more for a besula? That we'll see in the Gemara on Omud Beis. Why there would even be a difference in that regard? And Tosfos on Omud Beis explains further in that connection that in turn also is going to depend on her social status. Obviously, if she's from a more important family, then the amount, the difference in price that a person would pay would be greater. On the other hand, the Shita Mukubetza says maybe not necessarily that thing, as far as her status, is kind of included in boishes. So it is already included in boishes. So here it would just be, for an average girl, how much would be the difference in price in the scenario that the Gemara is going to bring on Omer Beis, why a person would be willing to pay more for a besula. When you think about it, you know, the purpose of a shifcha is to serve him. It's to work around the house. For that, it obviously wouldn't make a difference whether she's a besula or not. But we're going to see in the Gemara that there's a scenario where it would make a difference to a prospective buyer. So that's the amount that you pay for that. Continues the Mishnah. Knas shava b'chol adam. Now, on the other hand, the knas is the same for every person. It's 50 shkolim regardless. B'chol sheyesh the kitz for menatoya shava b'chol adam. In general, any time that the Torah gives you a fixed amount to pay, then it's the same for every person. For example, in the Gemara, which we're going to talk about, the Torah tells us that if a person has an ox, and that ox gores and kills somebody else's Eved Knani or Shifcha Knanis, then you pay a flat 30 shekel, and that applies across the board, no matter what the actual value of the Eved or the Shifcha was. So the same thing over here. When the Torah says 50 shekel, then that's 50 shekel across the board. But as we said, that's only for one aspect of what he did. In addition, there's also the boshes and the pagam, and in the case of the case of oynes, there's also tsar. The Mishnah, by the way, doesn't specify exactly how you calculate the tsar. But the Rambam explains what you do is basically you figure out how much would the father, or she, if her father is gone, would have been willing to pay in order not to suffer this kind of tsar from this kind of person. Okay. So the Gemara asks, how do we know that, in fact, there are these additional payments? The Ema Chamishim Sloyim Omer Achmona Mikol Mili. Maybe when the Torah is telling us he pays 50 Sloyim, it means that includes everything. It includes the Boshes, it includes the Pagam, it includes everything. How do we know that there are these additional payments outside of that? And the answer is Amar Rav Zeira Yomru. It has to be logically Yomru, otherwise people are gonna wonder about it. Ba'abas Malachim Chamishim, Ba'abas Adyotis Chamishim. What would be the logic? If the girl was a princess, then you pay only 50 shekel, and if you pay, and if she was the daughter of a commoner, you're also paying 50 shekel. There's no logical reason that those should be the same. You obviously have to have a difference, at least as far as boishes. So there's no question he has to pay boishes, and once he's paying that, he has to pay the other ones as well. Omale Abaya, but Abaya says that's not a logical proof. Ihochi, if you're going to learn like that, gabe Evan Nami. Then think of how it would be by the Evan. Yomru, are people going to say, again, where the Torah tells us that if you're sure killed somebody's Evan, that you have to pay 30 shkolim, are you going to say the same thing? Yomru, Evan Nokuv Magolius Shloshim. If the guy, if this Evan who was killed was somebody who knows how to pierce holes in pearls, which is a very skilled task and it's worth a lot of money, then, nevertheless, Shloshim, you're still paying 30 shekel. Evet osa maisa machat. And if all he knows how to do is sew, which is a very common kind of labor, Shloshim, then it's also 30. Obviously, there the Torah is telling you 30 is 30, and that's that. Why shouldn't we say the same thing over here, that 50 is 50, and that's that? And the fact that, just like over there, the differences in the skills of the Evet don't make a difference. The same way over here, the difference in the social status of the girl shouldn't make a difference. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Ela Amar Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says here's a different svara that we can use to say that necessarily boishes at least has to be separate. Ilu ba'al er shnayim. Suppose that two men had relations with her. Echad kedarka v'echad shaloi kedarka. One was kedarka, and then in that way she lost to b'sulim, and the other one was shaloi kedarka, where there's no loss of b'sulim. Tosfos actually points out that really what it means is it's the other way around. It means that the first one was Shaloi Kedarka, so she still has her physical basulim, but on the other hand, there's now a pagam. There's now a certain flaw in her. Before she was completely without ever having been with a man. Now she was, but it was Shaloi Kedarka. And then the other one comes and does Kedarka and actually makes her lose her basulim. So what are you going to say? Yomu ba shleima chamishim ba guma chamishim. Would you say how could you say that should be the same 50 shkolim for when he had the first one who had relations with her when she's fully intact, and the other one when she's not fully intact because she already was shaloi kedarka, you're going to say he also has to pay 50 shkolim. Obviously not. So therefore, the difference has to be that in that case, there has to be, yes, the second one is the one going to be paying knas because he made her lose her basulim. But on the other hand, it would be a little bit less than it otherwise would because she already has, or in the case of pagam, it would be a little bit less because she's already kind of pogrom. Omele Abaya, but again, Abaya says, so what's the problem with that? Ihochi, by that logic, Gabi Eved Nami, you could argue the same thing by an Eved. Yomru Eved Bori Shloshim, Eved Mukeshkin Shloshim. Would you say the same thing that the Eved, when he's killed by the Shur, it doesn't matter whether he's healthy or whether he's covered with boils? Obviously, there's no difference. 30 shkolim is 30 shkolim. So what that this girl is pogrom after the first one? That doesn't necessarily mean that doesn't necessarily mean that we should vary the payment because of that. Ela Amar Abaya. So rather, Abaya says it's not really a matter. It's not really a matter of logic. Omakro tachas asherina. The pasuk says that in the case of the oinus, that he pays the 50 shkolim because he afflicted her, implying hi tachas asherina, implying that the 50 he's paying because he afflicted her, because he caused her to do something that she otherwise wouldn't have done, namely to have relations and lose her b'sulim. Miklal the ikaboshes of gam. Therefore, that implies that there's other things as well. Now ina, the word ina in the pasuk, generally speaking, is used to mean having relations. The word inui in the Torah, for example, we find by Shechem and Dina, by Yishkavos of Ayaneha. You have other examples like that here and there. So the implication is that here, with this oinus, and we learn from that, the Mefata did something, did a kind of hezek, which is unusual, where you don't really find in other circumstances, and therefore we make him pay for that tachas hasha'ina. The implication is that there were other things that he, there are other things which you could find by other mazikim as well, and those he still has to pay for. So therefore, so you evaluate among the regular five things that are mazik would have to pay, then you figure out which ones are applicable over here, and those are the ones he has to pay in addition as well. So that's Tabaya says. So it's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of we see the Torah itself is saying Tachas HaShe'ina, implying that there's more payments above and beyond that. Rava Omar. Rava says there's a different way we can learn it. Omar Krav Nosana Isha Sheikhav Ima Lavia Naira Chamishim Kosef. The Pasuk says that the man who lay with her has to give the father of the girl 50 silver coins, 50 shekel, implying, now why does that say, Sheikh of Ima, who lay with her, obviously, who else is going to be paying it? It means Hanoah Shchiva Nun, means just for the fact that he had the Hanoah of lying with her, he's paying 50. Miklal de'ika boshes of gam, that implies that on top of that, there's also boshes of gam, which are not directly, which are not as a result of the hana, but rather as a result of the damage that he caused to her. Okay. So the Gemara asks now, according to both of them, the ema l'dida, so how do we know that these extra payments of, boshes and pagam and tsar in the case of an anusa, how do we know that they go to the father? Maybe they go to her. Knas, okay, of course it says that he gives to the father of the girl. But how do we know that the other ones also go to him? And the answer is, Omakura binureha beisavia. The answer is because the pasuk says in a different context in connection with at the end of the parasha of Nidorim and Parashas Matthes, it says in her Nurim during her time when she's in Naira, beisavia in her father's house, implying kol shvach nureha laavia, implying that all benefits that come during her Nurim go to her father. Since by definition this whole matter of oinus and mafata has to be no later than when she's a naira, because as we've discussed before, once she becomes a begeres, then the whole concept of knas no longer applies. Then therefore the pasuk is implying that money goes to her father. So not just the 50, but also the boshes and pagam and so forth. So the Gemara asked, if that's where you're learning it from, the elahod omar. And the Elohad Omer of Huna Omer Rab, Minayin Shemaisa Baslavia. What about though? We find that Rav Huna says in the name of Rab that how do we know that any earnings of a girl, of Ktana or Naira, go to her father? So later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about, for example, that there were typical kinds of jobs that women would do around the house, such as spinning or weaving or what have you. Anything she spins or weaves or whatever is going to go to her father, and any other money that she makes as well. So we're saying that all of that goes to her father. And Rav Huna says, how do we know that? Shenemar v'chiyimko ishes bita la'oma, because the pasuk describes the scenario where a man sells his daughter as a maidservant. So we learn from that not only that he's able to say that, the fact that it uses the word, that it phrases it like that, bita la'oma, that you have those two words one next to the other, his daughter as a maidservant. We learn from that ma oma maisia de la'raba, just like a maidservant, whatever she makes and whatever she earns goes to her master. Af bas maisia de la'raba, so it is with a daughter, that everything that she makes or earns goes to her father. So he's not learning from the words binureha beisavia. He's learning it from a different pasuk. Lamali, according to what we just said, why would we need that? People claim binureha beisavia. Why wouldn't Rav Huna be able to learn it from that? And instead, he needs a different pasuk. Ella, obviously, the answer must be hahi b'hafaras nedarim v'dichtiv, because the pasuk binureha beisavia is talking about in connection with hataras nedarim, hafaras nedarim rather, the fact that the father has the ability to cancel her nedarim. So it's not necessarily teaching us anything about her earnings or about anything like that, or in this case about the boshes and the pagam. So therefore, we need a different pasuk. V'chitema neilach minyei. So you're going to say, so what? So it says it in connection with nedarim. Why can't we learn from that to other things? And the answer is mamona miyisur loyafinan, because you can't learn mamon from isur, given that. This is a matter of mamon over here. That's a matter of isur v'hetu. You can't learn one from the other. So just because, fine, the Torah gives the father the right to cancel his daughter's nedarim doesn't mean that automatically, because of that, he's also entitled to her earnings, and therefore instead we need a different pasuk for Maisi Adel. So now the problem with that is, so it's one thing Maisi Adel, we can learn from. So it's like this. When it comes to boshes and pagam on the face of it, we can't learn it from minorei habeis avia because, again, that's a matter of isavat. You can't learn from esbito la'oma, like as Rapuna is doing, because that works as far as maisi adeha. That works as far as her earnings. Fine, we're saying the same way. The earnings of an Amma go to her master, but there's no particular source that would tell us, for example, that if a man has an Amma Hevriya and she is injured and gets boishes and pagam and so forth, that it should go to her master. Why would we say, where's the source to say, therefore, that those things should go to her father? And the answer is Elamis Stabra Daviyahabi. Rather, we can say it's a logical thing that the boishes and pagam go to the father. Because after all, he has the ability to cause her boishes and pagam himself. After all, he has the full ability when she's a katana or naira to accept kedushin on her behalf. And that means we're going to learn later on in the next parak that the father has the full rights over his daughter when she's a katana or a naira, as far as her kedushin and as far as all three methods of kedushin. We know that there were three methods: kesef, shtar, and bia. And all three of those he has reshus over, even in the sense of bia. In other words, suppose that somebody comes to the father and says, I want to be mekadesh your daughter with bia, then the father has the ability to give him reshus to do that. Now, okay, later on, the Gemara says the chachamim are not very happy with kedushe bia at all, and somebody who does that gets makas maudus, fine. But on a daraisa level, kedushe bia does work, and that person could be the boy muscle of the manuval of mukashkin. That person potentially could even be a person who's very ugly or dirty, or a person with mukesh shchin who's covered with boils, and still the father would have the ability to tell him, fine, go ahead, be mekadesh by my daughter by doing bia with her. And even the guy can offer money to the father in order to do that. So, and the father is given the rights, minatora, to do that. So we're not saying he'd be a very nice guy for doing it, but he does have the ability to do it. Therefore, given that boishes and pagam of hers are in effect in the father's hands, then therefore it's logical that now if she suffered boishes and pagam from a third party, it's logical to say that money goes to the father rather than directly to her, as long as the father is alive, that is. So that's how we know that it goes to the father. Next, we said in the Mishnah, pagam roin oisakili shivchanim teres. We said that how do we evaluate pagam? We figure out as if she was a woman being sold as a slave woman in the market, and we figure out the difference in price between a basula and a non-basula. So the question is, hefi sheminema, how do we evaluate that? Why would anybody pay more for a basula? It means that we figure out the difference, how much would a person be willing to pay for the difference between whether she's a basula or a ba'ula to serve him. I says, what's the difference? What's the difference? So whether he has her working around the house, it doesn't matter to him whether she's a basula or not. Why would he pay extra for a basula? And the answer is no. What it means is, okay, but what it means is where he plans to marry her off to an Eved Kanani of his, then there would be a difference. Still, the Gemara says, my naftalenina. Still, why would there be a difference? What's the purpose of marrying her off to an Eved? Is in order that they'll have children who will be another generation of Avadim. So again, what's the difference whether she's a basula or not? Either way, she's still going to be able to have children. So why would he pay extra for basula? And the answer is be'evet sheyesh le'rabbi kodas ruach hemenu. It means where the slave is one that his master has particular pleasure from. This slave does his work very conscientiously. So the master is thinking to himself, I want to do something extra special for this guy, so I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get him a wife. I'm going to get him a shifcha as a wife who is a basula, and that way he has the experience of having relations with and being married to a basula, which is more psychologically pleasing to him, and therefore I'm willing to pay extra for a basula for that. So now, given that, then we figure out what would be the difference in price between that and between her and a non-basula, and that's the amount the guy pays for pagam. And again, he was where Tosfos is saying that on the face of it, then how does that help? Still, if she's from a more prominent family, then shouldn't she have to be paying more? And Tosfos says, fine. Let's say, for example, a person has a choice. Let's say, for example, this master has this situation. He has an Eved that he wants to do something extra special for. So now he might figure, okay, so I want to get him a Besula. Within that, if I have the opportunity to get him as a Shivcha, a girl from a more socially prominent family, then I'll do that. And therefore, I'll pay extra for the fact that she's number one from a more prominent family, and for the fact that she's a basula, and therefore, so he's paying for that. So that's according to Tosfos, and then according to Shittim Kubetzes, it's really the first part, the fact that she's from a prominent family, that really goes into Boshes. And then over here, we're just talking about, if we're talking about an average level girl. Anyway, so that's how we figure it out. Mishnah says, Kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas. Here's a rule. When we just talked about the fact that a father has the right al pi halacha to sell his daughter as an omahivya. So whenever he's able to sell her ein knas, then there's no knas. Namely, while she's a katana, is the time he's able to sell her as an omahivya. During that time, when she's a katana, there's no knas. If there were to be ernest and mafata during that time, then there's no knas. B'chomokim she has knas ein mecher, and vice versa. At the time when Knas kicks in, namely when she becomes a Naira, at that point it's too late for him to sell her. And he explains, and the Tana explains, Ktana yesh lamecha ve'en l'knas. When she's a Ktana, the father can sell her as an omahivriya, but there's no Knas yet if somebody is ma'anis or mafata her. Naira yesh l'knas ve'en l'mecha, and a Naira is the other way around. There is Knas if there's onus or mafata, but there's no mecha because the father at that point has no right to sell her. In fact, so Rashi explains based on a Gemara elsewhere that says the vert is we know that an Eved Ivri and Omah Ivriya go free in various ways, among other things, when 6 years are over or when Yovel comes and so forth. In the case of a girl, also when she becomes a Naira, when she develops Shtei Sairus, then automatically she goes free. So now we can make a kavachomer. If she goes free when she develops Shtei Sairus, even though she was sold as a Tana, how much more so that once she's a Naira, you can't sell her to begin with. So therefore, that's what we mean that the father can't sell her anymore as an Omahavriya when she's a Naira. But on the other hand, when she's a Tana, she could. And when she's a Tana, he could. But the Tana of our Mishnah, who the Gemara is going to say is Reb Meir, is saying, on the other hand, when it comes to Knas, that kicks in only when she's a Naira, only when she develops Shtei Sairus. And the Mishnah continues, Abegeres, in the Lamech of Le Knas. Once she's a Begeres, then there's neither. He can't sell her as an Omar Ibriya. Obviously not. He couldn't already as a Naira. And there's also no Knas, because the Knas disappears once she's no longer a Naira, once she becomes a Begeres, which is 6 months after Naira. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Zutir Rav Meir, that is a point of Rav Meir, that Rav Meir is saying that there's no Knas for Ktani. Av Chacham Amarim, yesh la Knas v'makam Mecher. The Chacham say there could very well be Knas and Mecher at the same time. When she's a Ktana, then both things will apply. The father could sell her as an Omohavia, and the concept of Knas also applies. Ditanya, as in fact we learn in Abraisa. A girl from when she's born until she develops Shtei Sairus, yesh la mecha ve'en la knas. Her father can sell her as an Omer Ivriya, but there's no knas yet. Mishatovi Shtei Sairus achikibbe yesh la knas ve'en la mecha. Once she develops Shtei Sairus, from then the 6 months until she becomes a begeres, there's knas but no mecha. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Shahoy Rav Meir emu kol makom sheyesh mecha ein knas, v'chol makom sheyesh knas ein mecha. From when she's 3 years old until she becomes a begeres, then there is a knas. So the Gemara says, knas ein mecheloi. What are the Chacham saying? During that time, there's knas. During that time, they're not allowed, the father's not allowed to sell her. Of course, he's allowed to sell her as long as she's a ktana. And the answer is, ema af knas v'mokem mecher. You're right. What the Chachamim mean is that there is, in addition, knas, the mecher already existed from when she was born. Now, when she becomes 3 years old, then a new thing kicks in, namely that there can be knas. If she was below three, then there's not going to be knas, because as we've learned other times, her basulim will grow back. So therefore, that's not really considered bia in Torah at all. In halacha at all. So therefore, so the Chachamim are saying that from when she's born, he has the right to sell her as an omer. The Chachamim are saying to the mayor, fine, we all agree on that. But we're saying that once she becomes 3 years old, then in addition, knas kicks in, which the mayor is saying, I disagree with that, and I say that happens only when she becomes 12. So the Gemara says, Omer of Chista, my time with the mayor. Why does the mayor say that these two things are mutually exclusive, and it's an, and a ktana has only mecher, and a naira has only knas? Because Omer Krav, loisiyah l'isha, the Pasuk says, in connection with the oynes, and again, we learn from that, to Mafata, that she should be to him for a wife, and the implication is, it has to be a girl who is capable of making herself be his wife, namely that she has the das, that she has the ability to be matna herself to him as a wife. So therefore, it can't apply to a ktana, because a ktana doesn't have that, ktana doesn't have das, she doesn't have the ability to accept kedushin on her own behalf. So what are the chachamim answer to that? Sure, it does say Veloisi Elisha. On the other hand, though, the Pasuk uses the word Naira, and throughout this whole thing, in almost every place, not just here, but in almost in every place where the Torah uses the word Naira, it usually spells it without the final hey. It usually spells it as if it said Nair. It's a Kriyoksi, essentially. There's one place, that Gemara is going to say in a few lines, where it says Naira in full with the hay. But other than that, most of the time when it says Naira, it says it without the final hay. So that word, in effect, it's saying Nair, afilu ktana b'mashma, so therefore it implies even a, an interesting vote on that from Rosham Shinafal Hirsch, he says, is because when a girl is little, there's not much of a difference in the shape of her body between her and a boy. So therefore, in other words, the word na'ar, spelt without the hay, suggests the age below Shtei Cyrus when the basic contours of her body are pretty much the same as those of a na'ar. Anyway, the point is, for the Chachamim say, that spelling without the hay implies that the rules apply to a ktana as well. So the Gemara says, Shomer Rav Papa Breder of Nachman in Beit Kluchis. Rav Papa Breder of Nachman from Beit Kluchis heard this explanation about the spelling of the word Naira. Ozel Omra Kameh Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, and he went and told it over to Rav Shimi Ba'ashi to see if he agrees with it. Omalei, so Rav Shimi Ba'ashi tells him, Atun ahomas nisula, you are learning this statement of Rish Lakish, the whole statement of Rish Lakish that we're saying that we haven't yet quoted Rish Lakish, but we're going to say in a second that this is a statement of Rish Lakish, that there's a difference, that because the word Naira is spelt without the hay, that we learn something from that. So he says, you are Atun, you and your yeshiva ahomas nisula, you're learning the statement of Rish Lakish about the change in the spelling of the word Naira in this connection to explain the machlokas of Rav Meir and the Chacham. Anan, we in all yeshiva, ahomas ninomla. We learn that statement about the change of the spelling in connection with a different thing. Namely, Omer Rish Lakish hamoitzi shem ra al ktana potter. Now, in the next parak, we're going to talk about the concept of moitzi shem ra, that the Torah describes in Parshas Kiseitze, where a man comes to Beis Din, says, I have evidence that my wife was Mizana during the Averson, which if that turns out to be true, then we give her Mises Beis Din, we give her Skila. And in fact, that Skila has a couple of unique features, which we'll talk about in the next parak. If it turns out that his Edim were false Edim, then instead he's called a Moitzi Shemra, and then, either way, he's Moitzi Shemra, because he's putting out a bad name against her, but if it turns out that what he's saying is false, and his Edim are false, then we give him Malkus, he pays a fine of 100 shkolim to his wife, and he's never allowed to divorce her. So Rish Lakish says that if the wife was a ktana when he makes this accusation, Potter, then he would be Potter from the penalties if it turns out that he and his Edim were lying. Because the Pasuk says that he has to pay the 100 shekel and give it to the father of the girl, and there, Naira Mole, Dibra Kosev, there the Pasuk spells out the word Naira in full with the hay. So that implies, therefore, that it doesn't apply to a ktana. So the Gemara says, Maski fun of Adaba Abba. So Rav Adaba Abba says, one second, how can you say that? Taima de Kosev Rahman and Naira. So you're telling me only because the Pasuk spells out the word Naira in full, because of that, you're saying that the whole concept of Moitzi Shemra doesn't apply if the woman is a Ktana. But But if it weren't for that, if not for that, you would think that that whole scenario applies even if she's a ktana. But the pasuk continues, if it turns out that it was true, she has no b'sulim, and as we're going to learn in the next parak, it means more than just she doesn't have b'sulim. To lose her b'sulim would be for any number of reasons. What we mean is that she was actually, that we know, we have edim that she was actually mizana during the Erosin, when she was an Eshesish. Then the pasuk says, Voitzius Hanaira Pesach Leisavirov Skolua. Then we take the girl out in front of her father's house and we give her skila. So obviously that can only apply to a Naira. Uktana la bas anshin. If she's a Ktana, and that she's not of the age to be punished yet. The whole concept of any punishments of mitzvah based in malchus or anything like that can only kick in when a person is a gadol, not when a person is a katan or a ktana. So therefore, not necessarily we have to say that the whole case of Moti Shemra applies only when she's a Naira. So how can you tell me that we're only learning that because of the spelling of the word Naira? Ella, no, rather what we have to say is the fact that the pasuk spells the word Naira in full with the hey, it's not to teach us about that case. You're right. In that case, obviously, the whole din can only apply when she's a Naira. It means kan Naira. Here, the pasuk is spelling out the word Naira in full, implying that it's only when she's a Naira, and we're saying necessarily it has to be that way because the part about her being punished wouldn't apply when she's a Ktana. Ha! But from that we learn, kol mokum shenema na'ar, wherever it spells Naira without the hey, afilu Ktana b'mashma, then it means that it includes even a Ktana as well. So therefore, the Chachamim are following that and saying, based on that, it comes out that now, when in the case of the onus and the fata, where it uses the word naira and spells it without the hey, then yes, it means, as the Chachamim are saying against Reb Meir, that yes, it means that the rule of ktas applies even when she's a ktana, because otherwise the Torah would have spelt it in full the way it did by Motzi Shemra, where by Motzi Shemra, necessarily, it has to be a gdola, because otherwise she's not bas onshin, and in fact, for that reason, and in fact, the Torah implies that by spelling it Naira with a hey in that one place and spelling it without the hey every other place where it says the word Naira. Okay, so the halacha is like the Chachamim, so in fact there can be when the girl is between 3 and 12 years old, the father is able to sell her as an Amor Hebriya, and he's also able to, and there is also the matter of Knas if there's Onus or Pitui during that time. And as we said, the money during that time, the money goes to her father.